with forestry is like you're talking about trees that take 60 years to grow. So it's the same as starting a company. Like it takes 60 years to really get your legs going. It takes 60 years to grow a tree. And yet at that exact second, you need to put a tree in the ground to let it start growing. Like right. you can't wait 60 years and expect a tree to be there. You need to start it now.
Right.
So you can, yes, you can have those really long-term visions and you know what you need to do to get there, but you need to be super concentrated on action right now, because if you're not doing something, nothing's happening. That's kind right. of the beauty of a bigger company is there will be people doing stuff, even if you're not. But a small company, if you're not doing something, nothing's moving.
All right. Welcome to the Frontliners Podcast, everybody. Today on the show, calling in from Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, I have my good friend, Stuart Hillhouse. Stuart is a graduate of the University of New Brunswick's Master's in Technology Management and Entrepreneurship program. He is previously the COO at GoDo, a data experience design company, which I'm really curious to hear a little bit more about. He's currently the digital marketing manager at Seatherm Technologies, and he is the host of the Business of Circularity podcast. Welcome to the show, Stuart Hillhouse.
Thank you, John. That was a great intro.
Yeah, that's my first crack at a live intro for this one. I thought I had to go for it.
Yeah, I think it works. Like it's easier just to get right in the conversation that way and put a little context.
Yeah, exactly. Gives everybody a little bit of background on you. But on that note, I was looking at your LinkedIn, and I know just of your personal interests that you have wide and varied interests. So personally, how do you make sense of the eclectic story in the various experiences of sort of dipping your toes around? What sort of story or context do you kind of give yourself as your own background?
I don't really think too hard to connect the dots between all the previous experiences. I think it's more of a behind the scenes thing where I recognize, that I've seen that before, but in something that's totally different. So I grew up in Toronto and then came to New Brunswick to go to university for forestry. So that kind of kicked things off right away as an uncommon route to go that a lot of people would do at that age. But I always had an interest in the outdoors. My parents raised me going to the summer camp and the cottage and all kinds of outdoor things. So it made a lot of sense in my head. I was like, get me out of the city. Let's go do forestry. Let's figure what that's all about. But even through that program, it wasn't about being in the woods all the time necessarily. It started off with science and biology and chemistry.
Right.
And then by the end of it, you were talking about management plans. So managing trees and the land, but also the money that is required to make that industry work. And so that kind of piqued my interest in thinking about, I guess, the patterns in like watching a tree grow and understanding how that translates to money in the future. And that's the kind of piqued my interest in the entrepreneurship and marketing space. And so that kind of came full circle that now I can choose when I want to be in the woods and I don't need to be in the woods for work every single day.
So you did your undergrad in forestry and then transition into the technology management entrepreneurship program. So you come out of there and you're looking at all of the various things you could do and you start GoDo.
Yeah, I, through a mutual friend, was introduced to a woman named Erin Flood, and she was thinking about starting a company and had already gotten a couple contracts and she was looking for some more help. And so the mutual friend was our mutual friend, actually, Sarah Taff, said, mm-hmm. Hey, let's all go on a bike ride and talk about data. Cause that was what Erin and Sarah had worked on in the past and something that had piqued my interest because forestry is very data heavy. You need to measure right. trees and it's all about kind of predicting the future. And so we all went on a bike ride and I just started geeking out about this GIS project I was working on. And Erin's eyes just lit up. And that was kind of the starting point for GoDo, which was a data consultancy working on experiences around data, because we saw the problem being everyone's always talking about data, but if you're non-technical or you've just never heard of it, or you don't really know you don't know what's going on, all of a sudden to be thrown into the idea of, now every decision you make at work needs to be data-driven. It's like, what the hell does that mean?
So right, right.
We worked with a lot of, again, like the eclecticness is kind of what I really appreciated about that work was we worked with some immigration projects, some conservation projects, some agriculture, all over the place, just But there were parallels in how people thought of data, because at the end of the day, it's still like a human understanding of what's going on. And so that was really our kind of common thread between all our projects. Same as my kind of career. It looks from above, it looks messy, but there is a thread somewhere that made sense to us.
So you shut that down just recently, or you moved on from that recently. What was the sort of most valuable thing you took away from that process of being, you know, the second man in and into a project where you're really leading a lot of the things from everything from business development right through to the actual data management and the actual outcome that's coming out of the work?
For me, that was my first experience in an early stage company. And so what I took away the most was, when there's very few people involved in the company, you're going to be having conversations with the same people all the time. And it might sound repetitive after a while, what you're talking about. So what I think I take away and what I do differently now is to be very clear about what the context of that conversation is. Because when now that I'm experiencing working at a larger company, it's like, oh, I'm speaking with someone in engineering. We're talking about an engineering problem. This isn't like a general strategy question. This isn't a general marketing conversation. It's easy when it's just two people. You're like, hey, Aaron, what do you think about this? Hey, Stu, what do you think about this? To add context to the conversation before you even get started, I think would have a lot of benefits, where you're just saying, hey, I want you to put on your 5-year strategic planning hat for the next 30 seconds so we can talk about it. And then once we're done that, we can like chop it and then start talking about what tasks need to be done today.
Right. So getting the broader context first, but then actually getting into sort of the daily tactics right afterwards.
Yeah. The parallel there that I kind of am realizing as we talk about it is what with forestry is like, you're talking about trees that take 60 years to grow. It's the same as starting a company. Like, it takes 60 years to really get your legs going. It takes 60 years to grow a tree. And yet at that exact second, you need to put a tree in the ground to let it start growing. Like, you can't wait 60 years and expect a tree to be there. You need to start it now.
Right.
So you can have those really long-term visions, and you know what you need to do to get there, but you need to be super concentrated on action right now, because if you're not doing something, nothing's happening. That's kind of the beauty of a bigger company is there will be people doing stuff, even if you're not. But a small company, if you're not doing something, nothing's moving.
Good metaphor. I like that. That's sort of the...
That worked out better than I thought it would.
Yeah. That was the unifying thread indeed. So now you mentioned, you know, you're getting into a role with a bigger company, Seatherm Technologies in Fredericton. Tell me a little bit about that, because that seems like it's a bit of a shift, you know, going from running this company to being the digital marketing manager. How did that all come up for you?
I think over the last 4 or 5 months, I'd really taken a lead on the marketing and communication side of things. That all of a sudden started piquing my interest a lot, because I saw good ideas being ignored because they weren't being presented the right way.
Right.
And by right way, I just mean the right way that to get the outcome that they were looking for. Like, there's tons of ways to do stuff. Yeah, I just kind of started, that became my interest. I started reading a lot about it and watching stuff and listening to podcasts. As a result of that, I got on the idea of learning in public. So things I read are really good in my mind, but unless I put them into practice, it's really hard to actually cement what that means or how it applies to me. And so because I wasn't really in a marketing job, I was started to just write on LinkedIn. I'd just be putting stuff out, thoughts pretty much on the daily of books I was reading. Really, I was just lifting the content from a book and then paraphrasing it in my own words and applying my own lens and then putting it out there, which...
Right.
Once you start creating content, you realize that is all content creation is just absorbing everything going on around you and then giving it your own lens. And that's the value too. Like, you're not the first person to ever talk about marketing, but you're the first you to start talk about marketing.
Right.
Yeah. So I started like publishing my thoughts, and people started reacting and enjoying it. And I got some good positive feedback. And then I got reached out to kind of talk about that marketing role, even though I'd never had an official marketing role. I just, but I was really engrossed by it and really wanted to work on it. And I saw this company as a great opportunity because it's a very technical product.
Right.
And it's a very scientific product. That's not necessarily the hottest thing going. So how can you turn something that's super technical into something that is to learn how to market that as my first kind of project is a really exciting perspective, in my opinion.
No kidding. I like what you said too about the public learning, because I think it's really easy to set a goal like, oh, I'm going to read a book a week, or, you know, I'm going to read 100 books in the next 100 days. It's a lot more difficult to say, here's what I read. I'm going to put it out there. Even in a community like LinkedIn, you know, obviously there's still trolls out there. You're very exposed. And I always respect when people are putting their thoughts out there, especially when it's consistent, because you don't necessarily have the time to really dig into it, whatever the topic is. You don't have a ton of time to really digest it over a long period of time. You take your sort of initial perception, initial reaction, and put it out there. And I think it's just a great way to learn naturally, because you're going to hear some interesting things from the comments and the engagement, and that's going to help you evolve too.
And it also helps you pull the things that are important to you at that time from the book you're reading. Mm-hmm. It's easy to say, oh, I just read 300 pages. Now I'm 300 pages smarter. It's like you didn't absorb 300 pages worth of stuff. You might have taken 15 cool ideas from that book. But guess what? Those 15 ideas are really meaningful to you right now. But if you were to reread that book next year, you'd probably have 15 different takeaways.
Totally.
And so I think that documentation of what I learned from this book or what I'm thinking about right now is the most important part, because then I can get it out of my brain and be like, okay, I already thought about that. I put my 2 cents to it. It's documented on LinkedIn now. I can go back. And if I got really good engagement with that, then obviously it resonated with a bunch of people. Right. I can go build that out and talk more about it. And maybe that's an episode for a podcast or a longer blog.
Right.
Just being just to not think about it too much and just get it out there has just been so like liberating as well.
It's the modern take on, if you're studying, you have to be taking notes. You know, if you're just reading, that's more so for entertainment or for leisure. But if you're actually studying a text, you're taking notes on it, you know, you're writing in the margins, whatever, or you're lifting some passages, providing some context and posting on LinkedIn, which is, you know, your modern take on real-time studying.
I got two things to say on that. First is there's a cool quote. I think it was Austin Kleon, who's a really cool author, artist, and his book's called Steal Like an Artist. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my kind of ways I think about consuming actively comes from that book. But one of his quotes is like, you can be a reader, but the first step to becoming a writer is being a reader with a pen. Because Right. Then all of a sudden you're engaging in a conversation with the written book you're doing. So Yep. That's one. And then the second one is I got a Kindle a couple months ago because I was just tearing through books and I was like, I need these to be cheaper but also because there's an app you can get called Readwise where it takes all your notes that you highlight in the Kindle and puts them on the app, and then it'll email you every morning quotes from your library of things that like,
Brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. So instead of having books and books and books of like handwritten notes, this actually compiles all the quotes that at some point in your life, like got you to sit up and pay attention. Mm-hmm. And now those act as my like morning prompts. Now is I just get a quote from a book I read. It could have been last week or it could have been last month with a quote. And I'm like, okay, I can talk about this.
Unreal. I like that. I got to check that app out. I wonder if it makes the translation to Kobos. The Canadian.
It does with that and also links with a whole bunch of other apps. So take a look.
Are you writing every morning on that note? Like, are you doing your LinkedIn posts sort of first thing in the morning on a daily basis? Or how do you actually fit that into a daily schedule?
Like I said, I just don't overthink it. I just sit down and sometimes not even sit down, just do it on my phone. But really, I did do it mornings for a while, trying to figure out what time of day gets the most views. I've yet to figure that out. I don't think there's really a rhyme or reason. Mm-hmm. The algorithm's just, we're at the mercy of it, but you can play into that by consistency. So if you're there every single day, you're going to get more views in a week than you would if you just post thinking that your post is going to be really, really good and you only post once a week and it doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think my process with that is I just take as many notes around me as possible. When I see something, it's like, okay, that had me paying attention. I should record that because then I can just easily turn that into 150 words on LinkedIn and then it's done and I can walk away. And then Right. The follow-up is comment, like engage with all the comments that come through and then also talking to other people in their comments. That's kind of the two tips I'd give to anyone who's looking to kind of use LinkedIn as a publishing platform or any type of content creation to build a following is to be doing it consistently, but then also being on the out, going to talk to other people and comment on their things because then you get seen more often.
I love what you're saying there, especially with consistency, because any platform on social media, if you're consistent, it's going to play in your favor in terms of the actual algorithm. That's sort of been my understanding of if you just show up on the platform, you're going to do a hell of a lot better than if you're sort of intermittently you know,
oh, yeah, posting. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Also, something that I don't know if anyone's really talking about is like, so if you're trying to do something on Instagram, by you following someone, they don't necessarily follow you back. So it's not like you're getting followers.
Right.
But on LinkedIn, it's still that idea of like connect with someone and then you're all of a sudden mutual followers. So you can actually have an active role in increasing your viewership by adding other people.
Mm.
In a contextual way. Like I'm not just going through and blasting people and just add.
Right, right.
But if someone comments or likes my post and I've never met this person or I don't know who they are, I will then click on their profile and read their stuff and make sure they're real and then add them. And then the key is to put a comment or like put a personalized note and say, hey, thanks for reading my stuff. Like I hope it was useful. Looking forward to learning more about your stuff. So you can actually have an active role in building your audience, which I think is kind of it's important to have that mechanism, I think.
It's nice that it's reciprocal on LinkedIn, as opposed to, like you said, Twitter, because Twitter doesn't mean anything if you follow somebody.
Yeah.
Or Instagram for that matter. One of the things that I do that is jumping up at me in terms of a strategy here. So I use Twitter all the time and, I love just sort of rolling through the feed. I find it hands down the most interesting, the most engaging, and also sort of the most tailored social media platform, which, you know, of course has its perils as well. But one of the things that I committed to doing was it's a very rare time now that I just retweet. I used to do that all the time. I'm like, oh, I like that retweet. My rule is that if I'm going to retweet, I have to provide some commentary because otherwise it's you're just essentially reading with no pen and paper. You're not putting anything in the margins. And it's an opportunity for me, just like, you know, what you're saying here is to put yourself out there and risk being humiliated or canceled or whatever when saying, hey, look, this is my take on it. What do you guys think?
You have to have some type of skin in the game by putting yourself out there. And that's just the reality of it. And it's uncomfortable for a while, but it gets more comfortable every single time. And then all of a sudden something will happen and it'll knock you down a few pegs and you're like, oh, cool. Now we're learning.
There's so much to be said about original content or original takes, just originality in general. So much of it is lost, I think, in social media too. You know, you look around and I always find it funny when like I see springtime hits and I see, you know, six people on my feed who have nothing to do with each other and they're all at the same vacation destination or what I'm like, you know, how much of this is really taken over our choices and our decisions. So I think when you have an opportunity to be original and say something that you really feel, people really resonate with that.
We're social creatures. Like you need things to compare to, you need people to relate with, and you can get away with just being silent. But this is the time that we have right now is unlike any other time in history where you have the ability to create your own platform for free. And the only gatekeeper now is your willingness to put in the consistent work.
For sure.
The gatekeepers are gone.
Yeah.
You are your own gatekeeper
now.
Yeah,
it's you versus you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you were to highlight some of the main pieces of content, whether it's a book or an article or a podcast, what has been really speaking to you and helping you progress in your development, especially with marketing and technology and these new interests?
I found him on LinkedIn. His name's Dave Gerhardt. Gerhardt.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, from Drift, previously.
Yeah. And same thing. Like I came into his universe just because of a third order connection liked his post. Then all of a sudden I saw it and I'm like, that's good. I'm going to follow him. And then I really liked it. So I started listening to the going through and listening to all his stuff that he'd created both for himself and then for his company that he was with and realized, oh, this guy's like really action oriented and doing all the things that he's also preaching. But then I started kind of getting into the deeper stuff with him and he started suggesting all these really old school advertising and copywriting books. Like David Ogilvy is kind of like the godfather of modern print advertising. And so that's been kind of me just kind of lifting all his content or Dave's content as he's like, hey, this book's really good. And so I'm just like, now I'm reading that book. I'm putting them into practice right now. So I can't really give a whole lot of feedback of whether they are effective or not. But the end of the day is still the same thing. Is like the mediums are always going to keep shifting. But the fundamental psychology that he was putting into practice 100 years ago, or David Ogilvy wouldn't be the 100-year-old one, but I'm reading it's called Scientific Advertising. And he was the guy who inspired Ogilvy, who inspired Gerhardt, who's inspiring me.
Right,
and the book is from 1914 or something like that, but you couldn't tell what year it was written in.
Right.
Every single line in this book is still 100% relevant. The advice around it is like, pay attention to the connections. One I'm reading right now that I kind of just came across just through Kindle recommendations is called The Content Trap. It's about media companies or like content companies and how they've had to evolve. Because what Netflix did was they were able to create connections between their contents. So they didn't necessarily start with volume. They started with, oh, at the end of this episode, we're going to show three other TV shows that I think that they're going to like. We're also going to push them to binge the next episode. We're also going to be pushing them a weekly customized feed of new stuff that they do. We're going to make it really easy for people to share that episode with their friends. We're going to make it really easy for people to rate. We're gonna, like all these, the connections between episodes is actually what's the strong thing that keeps people in a platform rather than the content itself.
Right.
And so he's just been giving tons of examples of like print, digital, video, physical, like how the New York Times implemented their paywall after years. And literally like it gets really granular about like they purposely left this backdoor. Like if you just highlighted the URL and deleted the question mark, then you could get behind the wall for free. But there is strategy behind like letting your techie hackers in because then they like post it online. And then again, it's still about connection. It's not about the content. It's about the connection that you've just created online. You're getting free publicity. The cost of patching that bug is actually not worth it because you're getting more people on your site to feed them ads. Like you're winning either way.
One of the great examples of that with Netflix, and this was sort of like the folklore for a while, was with House of Cards. When they made that, it was based off of preferences for the director and then for Kevin Spacey at that time as well. They put it together and, you know, everybody was watching it season one and, you know, they were saying like, oh my God, I can't believe this. This is such a great coincidence that finally, you know, this director
got something to, for
and,
me. Yeah,
exactly. Like, this is absolutely tailored for me. And you know, they're sitting on the other end being like, that is exactly the outcome.
Yeah. Speaking about podcasts, because we're both interested in that, is something I've been thinking about is like the time, like how long podcasts are. I'm starting to really think about that because this, in the last year, I've kind of really opened up a number, not how much in a day I listen to them, but the number of shows I'm willing to listen to. It used to be like, I had my three core ones that I'd go to and always listen to them. Then I was like, oh, introduce some more. And now I'm willing to take risks and listen to a show I've never heard about just because there's a interesting hook in the headline or there's a guest that I want to hear or something. I'm paying attention now to like the length of them because now I'm looking at my day. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll spend like an hour at the gym. It's a 15-minute walk to work. It's a 15-minute walk home. It's like now I'm putting shows into those parts of my day. Mm-hmm. Is it like, oh, that 15-minute walk, I don't necessarily want to listen to the first 15 minutes of an hour and a half long podcast.
Right.
I want to listen to that 15-minute show so that it's done by the time I get to work. Like perfect timing.
Yeah.
And I listen to an hour long at the work, at gym, or 2.5 hours. And so I don't know, what are you thinking about that? Like, because I know there's some 3-hour long like marathons and then there's the daily like 15-minute ones. And I see that as like a very cool, like start thinking about how it fits into someone's day.
Yeah. Well, this is maybe a bit of a meta take since, you know, we're sort of in it right now. But what I really want to do is hit the people hard and fast, just sort of the generic principles of, you know, of advertising, really. I want you to get in, understand the context. If it's interesting to you, you have all the pieces there. You know where the journey is going to start. And I'm hoping, you know, that we're right around half hour or so we can just slot into either 2 15-minute slots in the day or just a quick, you know, you got it on in the morning, you know, CBC News is over or whatever have you. And you get 30 minutes, put a podcast on and listen to a couple people speak about the lives that they're building. I think that if you're going to have a 3-hour marathon, you know, a conversational marathon, your competition is Joe Rogan and your competition is, you know, spitting chiclets. Like these are guys with huge reaches, really entertaining lives. Joe Rogan especially is a really extraordinary guy with an ordinary mask on. You know, if you think about his career and what he accomplishes, he's incredibly accomplished in all kinds of different fields. And I'm not,
he's got that book. Like he's grabbed the land there. So like, you can't compete with that. You can't compete with a 3-hour long in-depth thing with celebrities. Like,
it's done.
It's being done. So do something different.
Yeah. So exactly. So my thing is, you know, get people like yourself on the show who are doing interesting things, continuously pushing the envelope, and bonus points if you're doing it in public and you have the public platform. I think it's really interesting. There's all kinds of people and that everybody knows that do interesting things or live, you know, neat lives. But in this day and age, you might as well share it. You know, if you have some cool stuff on the go, get it out there, whether it's on LinkedIn, whether it's on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, whatever, put it out there because it's people enjoy it. You know, that's mm-hmm. part of the whole, the content landscape.
And you learn to have your voice too, your unique voice.
Yeah.
You can, it's easy to sit there and not publish and say, I could do a 3-hour long podcast interview and it would be just as good as Joe Rogan. But unless you like you, it won't be that good.
Yeah.
And same with me. I was like, oh, I bet I could do really good short form blogging. And then I started doing it. I'm like, oh, I kind of suck. And then now I'm like a month into it, doing it every single day. I'm like, okay, I think I'm getting better. And now I'm learning my voice.
Yeah.
The authors we love had to take years to figure out what their voice was. And so that's just the same thing.
Not quite having your own voice, not quite having it where you want it to be, but knowing where you want to go. Like that's sort of that discernment. It's going to be challenging at first when you're watching your blogs or you listen back to your first podcasts and you're cringing at some of the things you said or you know, some of the ways you did it. But you got to go through that. That's the only way to get to where you want to go. Like you said, you can't just sit there and wait for a tree to grow. You actually got to plant the thing.
Yeah, it keeps working. It's the metaphor that keeps on giving.
So talk to me a little bit about the business of circularity or about podcasting in general. Where do things stand right now with you in terms of podcast?
I started that in September of 2019. So yeah, last year. And the reason behind it was I've been listening to podcasts for like 4 or 5 years and just really getting into them and being like, oh yeah, same, like what we were just talking about. I bet I could do that. I bet it would be easy, but I never did it. And so I kept putting it off, being like, oh, I need to find the right topic. I need to find the thing. And so finally I started learning about circularity, which is a kind of a mechanism in the sustainability field of taking into consideration the end of life of a product in the design phase. So a pen is an example. Before you even mold the plastic and ship the pen and try and sell it, how is that plastic going to disintegrate? Where's that metal bit for the clip going to go? Where's the ink cartridge going to go? That's circular design thinking. And so I started hearing about that and I'm like, why is no one else talking about this? This is really interesting. I just never heard of it because it's more popular in Europe than North America. And then I kind of did a little research and there wasn't any podcast. So I was just like, okay,
right.
I don't know anything about this topic other than I'm interested in sustainability. Why don't I just start it? And that'll be my learning experience for how to like methods for setting up a podcast and the infrastructure of a podcast, 2, like learning how to talk to people, and 3, networking and creating content. And so I just did it. Like I started sharing circularity articles. I put a Google alert saying circularity. So every time a new Google alert would happen, I'd just read an article and be like, I guess this is topical. And I'd share it on LinkedIn and then like hashtag circularity. And then whoever would like it, I would then reach out and be like, hey, are you interested in circularity? Can I ask you, can I have you on my podcast? And then I learned how to set up the mics and set up Zoom and everything like that. And I just have a conversation. And then I learned how to edit. And at first I was thinking about I could have it for a while. And so now 10 episodes later, I've been blown away with how quickly I've learned stuff. Like I've actually learned a lot of important things. I've met some incredible people from across the world and all of a sudden have like positioned myself as a circularity go-to person.
Right.
Like within 10 episodes. So that's like less than 10 hours worth of public work, like public content. All of a sudden I was known as a circularity guy in circles. And people were coming up to me in the street and be like, hey, Stu, I listened to your podcast. I'm like, cool. I didn't know that you cared about circularity. And they're like, well, I don't, but I didn't know what it was. And I was interested in hearing you. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm also I'm changing my perception too about like podcasts don't need to be infinite. It can be kind of like a show. Like it had a place and time.
Yeah.
And it was really made sense there. And I think podcasts are good for that too, because they're not going to get pushed down to the bottom of a pile. Like podcasts are very topical. It's like, here it is. It's just sitting on the shelf. Don't worry, you can come back to it. So I don't feel bad walking away from it. I'm going to publish the last couple of interviews that I've done and kind of put a cap on it. Maybe I'll come back to it. But I've learned so much from that, that now that I'm more ingrained in the marketing world, I'm relaunching a new one that's going to be called Top of Mind. And I want it to be a little shorter, a little bit more concise, but also broad in the kind of subjects I want to cover, and just whatever I'm interested in at that point that has to do with marketing, I'm going to spin it any way I can to just get cool people on the show. Again, to meet people that I would have never otherwise met, hear their opinion on stuff that I don't know anything about. And then that's just in terms of like what we were talking about earlier about how you get inspired to create content is just like input. And so this all of a sudden becomes my input. I'm having a conversation and now I can just lift the language from this podcast and that becomes a blog post or a LinkedIn or whatever you want it to be.
What I find really interesting was that we were both making podcasts, totally different themes, but almost an identical trajectory. You know, you have 10 episodes, which is sort of, you know, your season, not necessarily the thing you're totally going to be married to forever, but you got to start somewhere, which is, you know, again, tying back to this whole theme. You know, I did 10 episodes of the To Be Canadian podcast and I realized it was fun talking to people. I was less interested in conversations about national identity and more interested in frontliners, what this is all about, you know, learning, self-development, improvement, ways to live, you know, bigger, more exciting, more interesting lives. And instead of just packing it in and saying, hey, look, you know, this whole podcasting thing isn't working. I tried it and it wasn't what, you know, I wasn't talking about the thing I was talking about, you know, but you and I both just make a slight pivot and away you go, keeping that momentum right on the same path, but with sort of a rejuvenated arsenal of, you know, what you're doing and what you're talking to.
Yeah, totally. And they're not going anywhere. Like when people type in To Be Canadian, it's still going to be there. And you're now kind of, consider yourself like an actor. It's not like an actor is going to be on the same TV show for their entire career.
Right.
They did that performance. It's recorded. You can go back and find it.
Right.
And now you can see how much better John is in his second series that he was a lead in.
Yeah. 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 Good analogy again. Man, you're bang on with the analogy. The new show, is that moving along at all? Or is that?
I'm recording people as I go. I don't have an official date on it, but I'm bummed at myself that I don't have something ongoing. So I want to get it up as quickly as possible. But I'll be doing some traveling in the next few weeks. So it's kind of, it's tricky to record. So that's another thing is trying to figure out how to make it as light a show as possible so that there's not a lot of production required so I can just get them out. Cause I don't know. I'm on that kick of just like getting it out there and just giving people what they came here for rather than like razzle dazzle kind of thing.
Totally.
I see the value in both, but again, it's like, I want it to be fit for the solution, which is, I want to know about marketing or I want to know about voice commands or whatever the topic is that week.
Right. And then, I mean, the most important thing of course is shipping products anyway. So take away the barriers and get some stuff out there. In your day-to-day then now, assuming you're spending some time in the office, what do things look like for you? You know, how much time are you allocating towards producing versus consuming content? What do you, or how do you shape your days to make sure you're spending time creating and making progress on the goals that you're looking at?
I've been trying to figure out what my morning schedule looks like. I used to do like some type of activity, like go to the gym in the morning and then go to work. I was trying to do, now that I've got more of a structured work time, I was trying to do writing or editing in the morning. That's just not working for me. I'm a little too sleepy to be trying to correct my writing. So I might just keep the exercise in the morning. And then I think just being diligent and in the evenings, like once you're done with the work day, recognizing that it's worth doing this work and not being distracted by, oh, I could very easily, like I'm getting paid, I'm doing stuff. Like I could very easily just not do my own stuff. But so I'm still working on like, how do I put the systems in place so that it's like easy for me to get my shit done.
Right.
And then I can take the time off I'm able to then take breaks when I need them, I can force myself to take breaks rather than take them when I need them.
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, I've scheduled this night off. So enjoy it and don't feel guilty because I've spent the last 4 days doing stuff every night.
Right.
That I know is like moving me to the next stage. So
I just recently canceled my Netflix for that reason. I found it was too easy to just turn it on. You know, there's so much on there. Even just for background noise, I just end up, you know, half-heartedly doing my work. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to shut this off for a little bit and try my best to really focus and see where that gets me. You know, I'll look back middle of the year in June and say, hey, you know, what kind of dossier, what kind of portfolio do I have that I can look at and say, hey, I actually was able to get out there and make something for the, you know, start of 2020.
I think that's why you have to do it in public, though. You have to put stuff out in public, because then there's proof when you're feeling discouraged to look back and be like, oh, I did put up 10 episodes last year.
Right, right.
I put it out there. Like, it's actually there for people to look at. And if you're not in any type of technical field where research or publications or lines of code are the norm, like, you can look at someone's history and say, oh, how many publications does she have? Or how many gits does this person have?
Right.
Those are like proof of the work. But if you're just in a kind of a knowledge job, there's very little proof of your work.
Right.
And you can leave a job being like, oh, I've got experience. They're like, cool, can we see it? You're like, no, not really, because it's not my work.
Right.
So that's another thing, is like, recording what you're doing, it has so much value when you're looking for the next thing or trying to understand patterns in your own interests. It's like, what have I created over the last couple of years? And look at my portfolio and be like, oh, well, there's a huge focus around topic X. Maybe that's my true calling. I should probably pursue that.
Just looking back, what would you say is the thing that you're most proud of?
I think there's more of like an internal thing I'm proud of. It's just like willingness to be flexible and to adapt. Like, when I came to New Brunswick, I didn't know a single person. I don't think I'd known anyone who'd gone to school here. There was no one I could ask. It was like, was it good?
Yeah.
What res should I live in?
No one that could locate it on the map.
And I think that's just been my kind of like watermark that I keep trying to compare myself to, or I guess work from. It's like, sense of being uncomfortable was so helpful in growing and figuring shit out. It's like, I want to keep making myself uncomfortable, because I recognize it always makes things so much better once you get comfortable. And then you're like, oh shit, I'm comfortable again. Let's do it again. I mean, I've had a couple of uncomfortable experiences this year that have led to such good things, but you're like, oh, I haven't had this feeling in a while. This is kind of cool. So I like putting myself in those situations. I don't necessarily like it at the exact second I have to like put my hand up or stand up or make the call or whatever it is.
Right.
But, afterwards, you're just like, okay, that was a good, that whether it worked out or not, internally, I know I just raised the bar on myself to accomplish that next thing. And so I think to answer your question, is the accomplishment is just like the internal willingness to keep being roll with the punches and make things happen.
This time next year, what are you really looking forward to looking back on and being able to say, hey, look, 2020 was a year that I accomplished this, or that I'm proud of this?
I think really dialing in my systems. I know that sounds like super robotic, but I read James Clear's Atomic Habits before Christmas. A lot of the things in there were pretty general in terms of like how habits are formed and stuff like that. But then all of a sudden you like read it one more time and you're like, wait a sec, none of this is typical. Like, this is all new thinking on how to create habits and feel accomplished. And so what his thing is talking about, it's not about your encouragement or inspiration or motivation to do anything. It's about the systems that you've put yourself in place to accomplish those. So like, you don't raise to your ambitions, you sink to your systems, I think is his quote.
Right.
So for me, I'm like, last year I might've been really hard on myself being like, oh man, like I had the ambition to get 20 podcasts out or something. And I only got 12 out. Like, I didn't reach it. So you can push yourself harder and say like, okay, I'm just not going to ever go out on Friday. I'm only going to come back and edit podcasts and stuff. It's like, yes, but I do enjoy going out on Fridays. So how can I build systems that make it really easy for me to edit a podcast so I can get them out, so that I can hit my numbers that I was feeling motivated to do?
Right.
And maybe those numbers aren't even the right numbers. Maybe I don't even need to think about numbers. I'm just thinking about the system that is over time moving me up and to the right on that, like, that chart of where I want to be. I think the systems that I want to put in place are, all around kind of like professional development, kind of in this new role with a new total landscape and a new product and a new company and everything like that. So a year from now, I'd like to be good at my job. I don't think I'm good at my job yet. And then personal, maintain all good relationships, physical, and all those kind of common buckets, but to really pay attention to all the systems within them, rather than blaming myself, blame the systems.
Right.
And all of a sudden it takes all the pressure off. You're like, oh, it's not me. I just need to think a better way to organize my gym bag so that I can get out the door faster, or the kind of route I take to work, or whatever it is.
Refining your systems is what makes all the difference. If you get the right process in place everything else is just going to be smooth. You know, you're going to take out the friction of going to the gym. Your gym bag's preloaded from the night before. You know, you're not running around your house trying to find your sneakers.
And you can adapt it, and they're meant to be adapted as your life changes. My life right now is not going to be the same in 2021. So I need to build systems so that my habits can continue despite external factors changing everything.
Well, Stuart, I think that's a pretty good start for Frontliners. This is the launch of season two, a little derivative of the To Be Canadian. Definitely very, very much right down the fairway, in my opinion, of somebody who can call themselves a frontliner, continuously pushing the boundaries and looking for more. Broad overarching theme and definition of frontliners is don't live life on the sidelines, which was a mantra that I had in high school to make sure that I was putting myself out there and making sure that next month, you know, next year, whatever timeline I had set was going to be different, was going to be better than the current circumstances I'm in, regardless, just in the name of self-progress. So I think this is an awesome way to start it, man. And thanks so much for coming on the show.
Anytime, John. I really appreciate it. And I'm super pumped for this new rendition of it.
It's Stuart Hillhouse on the podcast, the metaphor master. Plant the tree, ladies and gentlemen.